Good morning. Today's daf in Yuma's Yud Dalet. We're on Yud Gimel Amud Beis. We are starting today towards the bottom of the Amud Tanur Rabbanan, about five lines from the bottom. Gemara is going to be continuing just a little bit. It's not really super connected to what we discussed yesterday, but at the end of this short discussion, it's going to connect to what we discussed yesterday. So, what happened yesterday? So yesterday we talked about the Shita Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda says is that what we're going to do is that we're going to have him marry another woman just in case. You know that his first wife may die over the course of Yom Kippur. The Chachamim said to Rav Yehuda, that's extraordinarily unlikely, but Rav Yehuda says it is a concern of his, and so therefore, to make sure that he has a wife, because the Torah says beso, and it means that he has to be married, so we're going to have a second wife. The problem is, as we grappled with yesterday, is that he's not allowed to have two wives. The Torah says beso, which means that you're only supposed to have one wife, not two wives. So how do you make that work? How do you give an insurance wife to him at the same time he ends up on Yom Kippur with only one wife? Okay, so that's a really difficult question, and the Gemara yesterday answered that question, but with a lot of difficulty. The Gemara went through a lot of suggestions in terms of how do you make it happen. And effectively, the way you make it happen is that he hands his current wife a get, you know, his original wife a get, he hands his new wife a get, and basically what he does is he puts a condition in both of the gets so that he could trigger either one of the gets if necessary. Really, the truth of the matter is he can trigger one of the gittin if necessary, and if not necessary, so then he won't trigger it. But whatever the case is, so he's given the controls of one of the gittin in order to enact it if necessary. And that's how he can end up with Yom Kippur with one wife. That is a really that in of itself is an oversimplification of yesterday's daf, but that's what we saw yesterday. Okay, the Gemara now is going to continue Tana Rabbanan. We're starting the Braisa right now. Kohen Gadol makriv onen. So the Kohen Gadol is going to be makriv a karban even as an onen. Kohen Gadol loses one of the Zion Krovim, one of the seven relatives. So we know that such a Kohen is in fact have the status of being an onen. And as such, so under normal circumstances, an onen is not allowed to participate in the karbanos, not in the hakravas hakarban, and not in the achilas hakarban. An onen is totally barred and banned from performing any of the avoda. However, with that stated, we do know that a kohen gadol is different. Rashi over here quotes if you take a look at the Rashi, makriv onen. So Rashi at the very top of the amud, Rashi about halfway down in the amud, so makriv onen. The Torah says that it would be mutter. The pasuk says, "La vivu ulimo lo yitama umina mikdash lo yetsev v'lo yichalal." So it works out perfectly in terms of parashas. You just heard it at Mincha yesterday in the afternoon. So a description over here. The Torah gives a description in which that he is not allowed to. He's not allowed to enter, and he's allowed to be mechalal. V'dashin la b'shchitas kachim, and the Gemara in Zvachim darshins b'meisav v'v'imo v'einu tzarech latzeis miktushaso klal lios omid amakriv ki lo chilal avodas abekach. So if the Kohen Gadol is an onen, so he's not going to be mechalal. If he does the avoda will not be deconsecrated. Meaning the avoda is going to be a good avoda for the Kohen Gadol, but this is only for the Kohen Gadol. This is not going to be true for any other Kohen. However, next Rashi, Vein Ochel. So the Kohen Gadol is in a funny position as being an Onein, and that he'll do the Avoda, but he's not going to be able to partake of the Achilas HaKarban. And that's the next Rashi writes, Shelo Hutra Kan El Avod V'Kachim El Avoda. So the only heter over here is for the Kohen Gadol to do the Avoda. However, kachim asur laonim, but you're not allowed to eat the kachim. Kavachomer me maisar kal shamer Torah lo achalti beonim imenu. Okay, so it's a kavachomer. Not going to go through it right now. But anyway, but there is this idea that a kohen gadol can offer the karbanos as an onen, but he cannot partake. Which again is different than any other kohen. Any other kohen as an onen is going to be barred and banned from doing the avoda. With all that stated, why are we discussing this now? Meaning it's, of course, obviously important, halacha. But how is it germane to our discussion? So stay tuned. We're gonna explain in just a moment. So, ve'eino ochel. However, the Braisa says he doesn't eat. Well, that part we already established. And Rav Yehuda Amar Kol Hayom. And Rav Yehuda makes a statement in the Braisa, which is nearly impossible to understand. The words are easy. What is he talking about? It's difficult. Kol Hayom all day. What those are very few words, and what he's trying to express over here. So that's really, really difficult. In fact, as you can imagine, that's going to be the Gemara's next question. My kol hayom. So what's Rav Yehuda saying kol hayom? So Amar Rav lo nizrucha ella haviyom mitoch beisa. So Rav offers a pshat. Rav's pshat's like this. So your Kohen Gadol now has just become a no-name, meaning Rachmanis. He lost one of his seven relatives, any one of them. And so Rav says that what Rav Yehuda says kol hayom, so what Rav Yehuda means is that we're basically going to take him out of his house and we're going to have him do the avoda. Okay, that's a little counterintuitive, meaning right now he's, you know, mourning. Right, the word over here is not legally precise. He's not an avil as of yet. Right now he's just talking about where he lost one of the Zayin Krovim. So halachically he's what's called an onein, but we're just talking about his emotional state, so he's extraordinarily sad. So what Rav is suggesting as far as pshat for Rav Yehuda is, so you know what's a good idea right now? So let's get him back to work. Right? Get him back to work. And Rashi writes, it's an amazing Rashi. So Rashi writes, Laviyu mitzoch beiso, mitzvah hi shaviyu lemikdash lavot kol yom. So you know what? Let's get him to work the whole day. Kidei lefakech tzaro. And it'll mitigate some of the pain that he's experiencing right now. In other words, get him back to work. Okay, so, right, I'm not the counselor, just I'm a rabbi in high school, but you can imagine that after mourning is over, so that's a good idea. But over here, we're talking about at ground zero, we're talking about right after he loses one of his close relatives. Okay, so it seems to be pretty soon after, but the point is that right now that is our first offering as a pshat in Rabbi Yehuda. No, it is a good example. Right now we're just trying to figure out what the pshat in Rabbi Yehuda is. When Rabbi Yehuda says kol hayom, so what do you mean by that?
Doesn't that provide further support for his?
It could be. Rabbi Yehuda really does not say enough words where we're really clear as to what he's saying right now. And so what the Gemara is doing is the Gemara is just trying on a couple of pshatim. So the first pshat of Rava is that we bring him to work. So Amalei Abaye, Hashel Rabbi Yehuda Afukim Afkina Lei Detanya. So Abaye says to Rava, it's not a good pshat. Because as we're going to see in just a moment, for Rav Yehuda, we're going to go in the opposite direction. We want Kohanim to go home, not to stay here and do work. And for Rav Yehuda now, if you can imagine that we're going to excuse him from work when he's an onein. So you mean to tell me that according to Rav Yehuda, what we're going to do now is we're going to invite him to work? That's very difficult. Now, for Rashi, which we're going to go through right in just a moment, the question of the Gemara over here is going to be a little bit difficult to read and understand. Well, let's do that. So, Hayam in a makriv agabe mizbech v'sham shemes lomeis miniach avodaso v'yotzei divrei Rav Yehuda. So he's doing he's offering a karban on the mizbeach, and he hears that one of his relatives died. So what he'll do is that he will simply he'll leave the avoda and he'll go home. Divrei Rav Yehuda, that shitas Rav Yehuda. Now, as far as Rashi is concerned, Rashi says that we're talking over here about a kohen hedjo. We're not talking about a kohen gadol, which is a little bit difficult, obviously, because our discussion right now involves a Kohen Gadol, not a Kohen Hedjot. In fact, for a Kohen Hedjot, you're not allowed to do the Avodah Zanonin. So it is a little bit challenging for Rashi how this Brisa that we're learning right now is going to really be impacting our discussion over here. And in fact, you can see Tosos on the bottom over here where Tosos makes his point and Tosos gives a different shot in the Brisa. In fact, Tosos says that we're talking about the Kohen Gadol. Notwithstanding, just to stay with Rashi, but the point Rashi is making is that, look, at least we see a trend for Rav Yehuda. And the trend for Rav Yehuda is that we tell him to go home. When he's an onein, we tell him to go home. And he could be right in the middle of the avoda, doesn't matter. Go home. And Rav Yossi Omer, Gomer, Yigmor. And Rav Yossi says, at least finish the avoda you're doing, and then go home. So, fine. So Rav Yehuda and Rav Yossi are arguing about whether or not he should finish the current avoda that he's doing, but certainly everyone says he should go home. Again, it's a Kohen Hedjot. And according to Rav Yehuda, you stop in the middle of the avoda, you go home. Now, ve'at amart, ma'isina le'misoch beiso. So now, Abai says to Rava, so your position is unbelievably difficult. You're saying that now, according to Rav Yehuda, in this brisa, you're going to bring him from the house and into the office and have him do the avoda? That's very difficult to imagine. Okay. So, Alam Rava, my call ayam. So, okay, good. So that is one pshat that Rava offered, and Abai dismisses it. So Rava now is going to be offering another pshat. So my kol hayom. So here we are now with our second attempt of trying to understand Rabbi Yehuda, and that is Lama Sheino Oved
kolayom gzera shem yochal. So what he shouldn't do is that he shouldn't do the avoda all day, because what's going to end up happening is he might end up eating a gzera. Okay, really a curious gzera, by the way, because generally speaking, gzeras are for populations, for a group of people. Over here, we're talking about a gzera for just the Kohen Gadol. The gzera is only for the Kohen Gadol, because the Kohen Gadol is the only one who has the allowance to do the avoda while being in a state of owning. But nevertheless, this is now Rav's second understanding of Rabbi Yehuda, and that is that if you let him do the avoda kol hayom, so what's going to end up happening is we're all creatures of habits. He's going to do the avoda, and he's going to start eating, and that he's not allowed to do. So as a way of legislating that and protecting the karbanos, so that he doesn't eat the karbanos, so therefore he's not going to do the avoda. They're talking about at this point in time, any time of the year. Meaning this will be true any time of the year. So gzera shem yochal. If you take a look at Rashi over here, so Rashi writes, so eno ove kol hayom ad alayla vabalayla im balahakir chalav mivimur miakir. Now at nighttime you're allowed to do that. So kol hayom means that he shouldn't be working the entirety of the day, but once night rolls around, now he's allowed to work. What's the difference between day and night? Like, take a look at the next Rashi. Gzera shem yochal. Rashi writes, kol hayom asur b'achilas kashim min haTorah. So during the entirety of the day, so he's not allowed to eat kashim min haTorah. Ava ba'aninos halayla mishenikbar hameis bayom eino midivrei Torah lemidivrei sofrim. However, an idea that we've gone over numerous times when dealing with when talking about kashim is that aninos only goes till the end of the day. Okay, now again, I made this point clear. I'd love to make it again clear again. This idea of being an onen, we have an onen status nowadays for all of us when Rachmanus, any one of us loses one of the Zion Krovim, so we're an onen, and that aninus period continues until what point in time? Until the actual Kvura, and then the aninus period is lifted, and now you're into the period of Avelos. Okay. When dealing with Karbanos, that's not the case. When dealing with Karbanos, the aninus period ends at the end of the day, and it is not at all connected to Kvura, or I'll say it a little bit better. It's not directly connected with Kvura, meaning that a Kohen is going to be an Onain for the balance of the day, even though Kvura already occurred. But vis-a-vis Karbanos, you're an Onain until the end of the day. When does the Aninus end? Presumably by Shkias HaChama, right? By sunset or by Tzeitzo Kochav, and one of those two, but by the end of the day. Nighttime rolls around, so you're not an Onain min haTorah. There is a debate throughout Shas whether or not you're an Onain midrabanan for the following night, but at least min haTorah, you're not going to be an Onain. And so with that stated, so as Rashi points out over here, as long as the kfur occurred during the day, so his aninus status will now continue, but conclude at the end of the day, and then nighttime rolls around, and by nighttime now, he's not an onim in a Torah, and then he's allowed to do the avod. The eye is going to eat, so what? So first of all, according to some opinions, he's allowed to, and according to other opinions, it would only be an issur derabanan. And they're not going to make a gzera derabanan on an issur derabanan. Fine. So that is now going to be our second shot within the shita of Rav Yehuda. Amar Lei, Rav Ada Bravala Rava. We're on the very top of Yudan Amar Aleph, and the Gemara now continues in this discussion. So the following was posed to Rava. Umigaz Rav Yehuda Shem Yochal. Is Rav Yehuda really worried that the Kohen is going to eat? Meaning now the second shot of Rav Yehuda is it's a gzera, because the Kohen Gadol may end up eating. Vatanan. Now I'm going to remind you of what we learned in our Mishnah, and this is how all this connects to our mission. Now we're going to see the connective tissue of why we're having this discussion right now. And that is Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Afisha Acheres Mesaknin Lo, Shema Tamas Ishto. Because remember, according to Rabbi Yehuda, what we do is that we have a second wife for the Kohen Gadol in the event, just in case, that his original wife is going to die, and now we'll have a second wife. The second wife will become now his wife. Right. So and meanwhile, let's just, for a moment, let's consider. What does that mean? It means now that this Kohen Gadol is an Onain. Meaning, if he lost his first wife on Yom Kippur, so that means now that he's an Onain. And Rav Yehuda says, fine, he'll just continue doing the Avoda. He needs a wife? Good, we have a second wife, just in case. But what a good question. Hold that thought. V'imaisa ishto avid avoda v'lo gazer Rav Yehuda shem yocha. Now, so if his wife died, so he's doing the avoda, and Rav Yehuda's not worried about him eating. Now, Amar lei hachi hashta hasam kevin yom kippurim udukule ama lo ka'achli hunami lo asu lamechal hachi dukule ama achli hunami asu lamechal. So the Gemara gives a fantastic answer, and that is, you just can we talk here about the context of our discussion? And that is that we're talking right now about the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, you're really worried about him eating? Look around right now. Who's eating today? The answer, of course, is nobody. It's Yom Kippur. So I understand that under normal circumstances, Gzera Shama Yochal. Yeah, we're worried that he's going to eat. But today's Yom Kippur. Nobody's eating today. Kohen Gadol is not going to be tempted to eat. Now, V'chi Agavne Michaila La'aninus V'hamigarsha. Now, the Gemara says, fine. That in of itself is already a good point. The Gemara now is ready to make another point. So this is, Ben made this point just moments earlier. And that is, wait 1 second. You remember yesterday's daf? So yesterday's daf, what would happen if his wife is about to die? So if you remember, he's going to step foot into shul, trigger the get, and now he's going to be divorced with his wife retroactively. So the truth of the matter is that he's not technically an onan, because the retroactive get means that he divorced her prior to Yom Kippur. And so the Gemara now says, on a technicality, he's not an onan, so I don't even understand what the discussion was. Gemara gives a really, really powerful answer. Nihi, da'aninas l'chayla, atru de'milo mitrat. So the Gemara says, okay, you're right. He's not technically an onan, but he did just lose his wife. And I understand that on a technical standpoint, they were divorced retroactive to the beginning of Yom Kippur. But when all said and done, I'm going to make this just a little bit dramatic, right? They've been married for the last, right? They were married for the last 40 years. And okay, so technically it was no longer his wife. But in other words, but he's tarud. He's in a really despondent state. And therefore what? So, but he's not an onan, meaning the legal point is that status wise he's not an onan. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, Rashi writes over here, lo milo mitrad, uve kachim bein and simcha. When you're eating kachim, so you have to be in a state of simcha, you have to be a state of royalty. You have to be in a certain state of mind, in order to eat karbanos. And so over here, the Kohen Gadol, so he may not technically be an onan, but in terms of his ability, to eat karbanos, so it's been seriously impaired. So the reason why we're having the discussion, meaning the answer, we're still going to go back to the previous answer. Meaning he's not going to be tempted to eat because it's Yom Kippur, no one else is eating. But just at least from a theoretical standpoint of, yeah, but he's not technically an onan. So to that, the Gemara says, yeah, even if that were true, even if he weren't technically an onan, but still, the state of mind that a person has to have when eating karbanos, this Kohen Gadol on this particular Yom Kippur, even though technically not an onan, is not going to be in the proper state of mind. Atkan, that takes us to the end of our first circuit for today. We are now on the Mishnah on Yudal Amud Aleph, and obviously we continue. We are now up to the second Mishnah of the Masechta. Okay, and that's been some ride. We started the Masechta 2 weeks ago, and now we are going to be seeing Mishnah number two. Mishnah number two continues, Kol Shiva Sayamim Hu Zarek, Es Adam Umakter, Es Akataris Umetiv, Es Aneris Umakriv, Es Harosh Vesarego. Okay, so these 7 days. So what are we going to do? So basically, he's in training. He's in serious training to do the Avodas Yom HaKippurim. And for those 7 days, he's going to be sprinkling the blood and offering the Ketores and cleaning the Neros, right? Cleaning and lighting, right? Hatavas HaNeros. We'll talk more about that tomorrow's daf. And he'll offer the head and the front leg of the Karban Tamid. And all this is basically to train him to do the Avoda. Rashi writes over here, Who's Arikas Adam? So Rashi writes over here, basically, look, on Yom Kippur, we know, we're going to see this clearly in our Mishnayos coming up, he's going to be doing every single avoda on Yom Kippur. And basically what we want him to do is we want him to be totally habituated to doing the avoda. Now, at this point in time, he's a Kohen Gadol, and I'm sure he's got it down pretty well. But for those 7 days now, it's going to basically turn into a habit. Every day he's going to be doing an aspect of the avoda of the daily tamid, so that when Yom Kippur rolls around, so now he's going to be just totally in line, in sync with doing it, and good, because on Yom Kippur, obviously, there are going to be a lot of other responsibilities that he needs to do on Yom Kippur. So this will for sure at least train him for the basics, meaning the tamid, and then after that point in time, the other avoda, so it'll make the job go smoother and easier. Good. And quite frankly, by the way, Rashi doesn't say this, so you can just take this with a grain of salt. It also gives him something to do for the Shivas Yemei HaFrasha. I mean, you know, in other words, if he's just sitting there the whole time, okay, Anyway, the no, apparently not. No, I mean, just generally speaking, everyone was careful during those days. And yeah, you're right. Meaning putting him out there and putting. Yeah. I hear you. Putting him out there in the workforce definitely exposes him to accidents. For sure. Okay. I hear it. Vishar kol hayamim. Now, in any other day, meaning now the Mishnah is just going to turn its attention to, by the way, if you're a Kohen Gadol, so like, what can you do on any random day? And the answer is whatever you want. Right? It's good to be the king. It's good to be the Kohen Gadol. Right? When we learn the second parak of Sanhedrin, so I probably said that refrain once or twice, and I will say it again, Amir Tzashem. When we do the second parak of Sanhedrin, it's good to be the king. So over here in Yuma, you're going to probably hear me say this a number of times as well, it's good to be the Kohen Gadol. Obviously, a lot of responsibility and a lot of restriction, but at the same time, though, extra privileges. And as the privilege of being a Kohen Gadol, you can basically step in and do the avoda whatever you want, whenever you want. Even if, now I don't know how this exactly is going to work out from a social standpoint, but even if another Kohen won the lottery and is ready to do the avoda for that day, so the Kohen Gadol can at that point in time simply step in and say, "Hi, I'm here. I'll take that. Thank you very much." And it's not only in terms of doing the avoda; it's also helpful in terms of enjoying any carbon in terms of achila. Meaning he could step in and take any piece that he wants of a karban. Okay, good. This is a part of the privileges of being the Kohen Gadol. So, v'shar kol hayamim, imrasa lahakriv makriv. So you can do akrav anytime you want. Kohen Gadol, makriv chela barosh, v'noto chela barosh. So he can do any hakrava that he wants, he can do any avoda that he wants, and he can take any chelik that he wants. Okay, good. This is the benefits, the privileges of being a Kohen Gadol. With that stated, the Gemara continues. The Gemara starts, I should say. Mantana. So who is the author of our Braisa? I'm Rav Chista Deloka Rabbi Akiva. So Rav Chista now is going to propose that our Mishnah is not going like Rabbi Akiva. Now this next part of the Gemara admittedly is going to be a little bit complicated because we're going to learn together a lot of the halachas of Paraduma. And by learning a couple of halachas together, it's going to seem pretty clear, this is Rav Chista's proposal, that our Mishnah is not going like Rabbi Akiva, can't be going like Rabbi Akiva. Now why? So the Gemara is going to explain. Di Rabbi Akiva Hamar Tarash Nafla Alav Hazah Tam Aso. So Heche Avad Avoda. Because here's the sheet of Rabbi Akiva. Okay, we know that there are built-in ironies to the Paraduma, right? It's Matamitarum Matayar Tameyim, right? We got that down generally. But now let's be a little bit more specific today. What is that? What are some of the built-in ironies of the Paraduma? So here's the sheet of Rabbi Akiva. Now this is unique to Rabbi Akiva. As we're going to see in a moment, the Chachamim don't agree with Rabbi Akiva. So, but according to Rabbi Akiva, let's say I'm Tamei Meis. And so therefore I go and I get sprinkled with the Paraduma in order to become Tara. I'll be sprinkled on day 3 and on day 7. Good. So if and when I get sprinkled with the solution of the Paraduma on day 3 and day 7, I'm going to become Tara. Okay, you didn't need me for that. That's the Pesukim in the Torah. But let's say I'm not Tamei Meis. And then I get sprinkled with the Paraduma. According to Rabbi Akiva, I now become Tamei. Now, not a serious Tumah. It's only Tumas Yom Echad. And I'll tovel in the mikvah and I'll experience Erev Shemesh. And I'll be fine by tonight. But according to Rabbi Akiva, if a person who doesn't need the Paraduma gets sprinkled with the Paraduma, he becomes Tamei. Okay. Good. That's Shitas Rabbi Akiva. And again, that's a position exclusive to Rabbi Akiva. Now, consider that in our Mishnah, what do we learn together? That he's going to be sprinkled with the Paraduma. Now remember, there was a machlokas. Every one of the 7 days, only on day 3 and day 7, regardless, he's going to get sprinkled with the Paraduma. So, and remember, all this is precautionary. He doesn't really need it. So that means according to Rabbi Akiva, now what? So according to Rabbi Akiva, every time he gets sprinkled, he becomes tummy. That sounds strange, I know. But that's the sheet of Rabbi Akiva. So under those circumstances now, what are you going to do? He's going to be doing the avoda every one of the 7 days. He can't do the avoda every one of the 7 days because at least on day 3 and day 7, according to another opinion, on all 7 days, he's going to be sprinkled with the paraduma, thereby rendering him tame. Again, it's a light tumah. He'll tovel in the mikvah, he'll have hara of shemesh, and then he'll be fine. But considering that every day he does this during the Zayin Yemei Afrasha, he's going to be tummy every single day, immediately after he gets sprinkled with the Paraduma. Okay, good. That sheet is Rabbi Akiva. And so, our Mishnah can't be going like Rabbi Akiva because our Mishnah is talking about him doing the Avoda every one of the 7 days. And according to Rabbi Akiva, How are you doing the avoda if you're tame? Okay. Did Tanya. Now, that's the question. The Gemara now is just going to go over the background information, meaning, how do we know that Rabbi Akiva subscribes to this idea? So the Gemara goes through this, goes through the various brisas and mishnayos that make this point. So here we start with the brisa. Viza Torah la tamei. So you'll sprinkle the Torah, meaning the Torah cone is going to be sprinkling the tamei individual, ala tamei tahor, ve'ala tahor tamei. If you sprinkle somebody who's tamei, he's going to become tahor. However, this is Rabbi Kiva's drasha. If I sprinkle on somebody who's tahor, he's going to be tameh. Torah doesn't say it; it's inferred from the pasuk. So, div Rabbi Kiva that sheetus Rabbi Kiva v'chachamim amrim ain't a dvarim alalu amurim ela bedvarim amekablam tuma. So the chachamim say no. The pasuk over here is talking about dvarim amekablam tuma. Now, what the statement of the chachamim needs an explanation. We're going to give it an explanation in just a moment. But basically, what we know for sure at this point in time is that the Chachamim do not accept the drasha of Rabbi Kiva. That means, according to the Chachamim, you sprinkle the paraduma on anybody. If he's a tameh, good, it'll be mitarim. If he's tahor, he'll be just fine. He's not going to become tameh. Now, what did the Chachamim mean? The Gemara now is going to clarify. Maihi. Kididan. So over here, the Gemara quotes the Mishnah. The Mishnah in Paran is kavan lazos ala behema v'izal adam. Let's say you sprinkle on an animal. Your intention was to sprinkle on an animal, and meanwhile you sprinkled on a person. So im yesh be'ezov yishana. So if there's still some of the solution on the ezov is the, right, that's that reed. It's called in English a hyssop. Whatever that means. It's a reed in which you are going to be sprinkling the tummy person. So if there's any excess solution on it, so then you do it again. However, but let's say your intention was to sprinkle on a person, and meanwhile you sprinkled on a behema. So imesh be'ezov lo yishana. However, by sprinkling an animal, so then what you cannot do is you cannot sprinkle again. And the idea over here in this Mishnah part, and Rashi over here explains it, is that if you're sprinkling on something which is mekabel tuma, i.e. a person, so then what you could do is that you can reapply. In other words, that's considered a haza'ah, which gives you license and permission to go ahead and to sprinkle again. If, however, what you did is you sprinkled on something which is not mekabel tuma, in this Mishnah, i.e. an animal, so that means to say that now what basically you've done is that didn't qualify as a sprinkle. If it didn't qualify as a sprinkle, so what is that called in halacha? So Rashi says it's called a malacha. You did malacha now with the Efer Apara and the Mechatas. So as a result of that, now it becomes disqualified. And you can't reapply. That's the basic idea behind the Mishnah. And this is what the Chachamim are learning from the Pasuk. Meaning that Pasuk that according to Rabbi Kiva, we darshaned, that if you sprinkle on somebody's tummy, he's tar. If you sprinkle on somebody's tar, he's tummy. The Chachamim say no. The Pasuk is teaching us this particular halacha, that if you're sprinkling on a mekabel tuma, i.e. a person, so now that's considered hazah, and you can now reapply. It does not disqualify whatever remaining water is on the Azov. On the other hand, if I sprinkle on a davashe eino mekabel tuma, i.e. an animal, so that's it now. I've disqualified it, meaning that wasn't considered a hazah. In the absence of it being called a hazah, it's therefore malacha, and therefore I can't sprinkle it again. So fine. So that is now the machlokes between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim, and my time with Rabbi Kiva, nechto rechmana v'izah tahor, alav. Now the Gemara just simply fleshes out. How did Rabbi Kiva come to his conclusion? Because the pasuk should have said viza Torah love my alatame shemamina alatame mekablam tuma. Alatame tar v'alatar tame. Good. So it's from the extra word of the pasuk that Rabbi Kiva generates his drasha. V'rabbanan ha'alat varma mekablam tuma hudasa avahacha kavachomerhu. So again, according to the Chachamim, the pasuk is talking about a mekabel tuma as we just got done explaining. But as far as Rabbi Kiva's halacha, so the Chachamim say no. In fact, just the opposite. Meaning, what would logic dictate? And the Gemara spells it out. Im alatami tahor, alatar lo kol shekein. Well, logic would dictate if I sprinkle the mechatas on somebody who's tummy and it makes him tahor. So just imagine if I sprinkle on somebody tahor, for sure he's going to be tahor. And Rabbi Akiva, what would Rabbi Akiva do? So we can all figure this out. The Gemara is going to spell it out. Rabbi Akiva, hainu dekam reshlamo. Amarti es achak mahi. Achakma v'hi rechokim mimeni. So, and Rabbi Akiva would say, you know what you do with logic and paraduma? You take logic and you throw it right out the window. Meaning that there is no logic when it comes to the paraduma, and you want to make a kavachomer within the world of paraduma, you have no right to make any kind of kavachomer. Yes, I know it's illogical. Perfect. That's paraduma. Paraduma is a quintessential illogical, unreasonable halacha of the Torah. It's counterintuitive. So yeah, so I'm with you. It's counterintuitive. That's part and parcel of the nature of paraduma. So yes, if I'm sprinkling the mechatas on somebody's tummy, it becomes tahor. And I know logically that means that it shouldn't affect somebody who's tahor, but okay, this is paraduma. Now v'rabanan ha'u lamaze. And now, as far as the Chachamim are concerned, so the Chachamim, of course, agree, meaning the Pasuk in Kohelis, which the Gemara just quoted, Amarti achachma v'hi rechoka mimeni. So the Chachamim agree that there is an illogical, there's an irrational nature to paraduma, but that is something, that's totally different. So, and that is the following, v'rabanan, ha'u lamaze ulamazen alav tahor, the one who sprinkles, the one who's being sprinkled on, he's going to be tahor, both of them are going to be tahor, v'nogeh behem tameh, but if you go ahead, and you touch the mechatas, you're going to be tameh. Meaning there is no logic to that. That the Chachamim say is a pasuk, is a pshat in the pasuk in Koheles. The sprinkler, the sprinklee, making up words today. So they're tahor. But if you go ahead and you just simply touch the mechatas, you're going to be tameh. Now that's perfectly illogical, and the Chachamim say correct. That's the pshat in the pasuk in Koheles. Now the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. Right? Did you just hear yourself? You're saying that the one who's sprinkling, the sprinkler, so he's Tahor. Vaksiv, what do you mean? Right? The Pasuk says, Umaze mehanida yicha beis begadav. So the Pasuk says pretty clearly that the sprinkler is going to be Tameh. How can you say that the Mazah is Tahor? Like, what just happened over there? So my Mazah nogea. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you know what the pshat is? The Mazah in the Torah? It's talking about the nogea. This is where Torah Shabbat Peh becomes critical, because it's really not the simple pshat in the pasuk, but yet the tradition we have right now is that mazah is not to be taken literally, but rather mazah is talking about the one who touches it. Vaksiv mazah vaksiv nogeya. So the Gemara says, okay, look, I know, right? Obviously you have Torah Shabbat Peh, but just in terms of fitting into the psukim, it's really difficult. If you read through the psukim in Parshas Chukas, so you're going to see that there's one pasuk describing the mazah, there's another pasuk describing the nogeya. And it's really hard to just accept the idea that the mazah is a reference to the nogeah. V'odin, the Gemara says, and furthermore, mazah by kibos begadim, v'nogeah lo by kibos begadim. And just again, reading the psukim of the Torah, we know that there's a halachic difference between the mazah and the nogeah. The nogeah does not require that his clothing be toveled in the mikvah. However, the mazah, whatever the mazah is, which at face value would be the sprinkler, but whatever the mazah is, he does require kibos begadim. So really, it's hard to tell me that the mazah and the nogeah are one and the same. So elamai mazah, so the Gemara says, fine. So we're going to go back and say that mazah is not to be taken literally, meaning our Torah Shabbat Peh tells us that the mazah and the niza, now I'm making up Hebrew words, so but the sprinkler and the sprinklee, so they're going to be tar. That's our Torah Shabbat Peh, that's our tradition. And we know that the nogeah is going to be tameh. The Torah's description of mazah being tameh, that mazah is talking about somebody else. What is that mazah talking about? No say. It's talking about the one who is carrying the mechatas. That's the mazah of the Torah. V'nichzor rechmana no say. So the Gemara says, great. Good. Can I ask a simple question? If the Torah is interested in teaching us that the carrier of the mechatas is going to be tameh, so why doesn't the Torah say the word no say? It's a good question. So my taima, ksiv mazah kamashman debin and shir hazah. So the Gemara says, yeah, even though, yes, we know that the Torah is talking about the no say, the reason why the Torah says the word mazah is because they want to tell us a halacha. And that is that there is a requisite shir. The no say, the carrier of the mechatzis is going to be tameh when? When he carries a requisite amount. What is that requisite amount? The amount necessary for a hazah. The Gemara says, now wait 1 second. Hanich laman damar hazah tzricha shir. Elaman damar hazah tzricha shir. Michael Amemar. Do you know that that's a debate in terms of whether or not the hazah has a shir? Some say yes, some say no. So if you say yes, that's great. So then I understand pshat. But if you say no, and there are those who say no, so that's now going to be really difficult. Because you tell me that the only reason why the Torah calls a no say a mazah is because of shir? There is no shir according to one manda amar. So the Gemara says, afila manda amar hazayin tzricha shir hani mili agav de gavra. Yes, it's true. There is a position that says that the mazah does not require shir. But the shir over here means that when you hit the person, when you hit the recipient, the sprinklee, so it doesn't need to be a requisite amount that hits him. Aval b'mana tzricha shir, but on the actual azov itself, so there needs to be a shir. And what's that shir going to be? Didnan. So here, once again, another Mishnah Parah. Kamiyeh bahen v'yeh kedei hazar. So kedei sheyitvo roshei giv'olim v'yazeh.
Really, the shear over here, I said on the Azov, be a little bit more precise. The amount of mechatas that's in the bowl that I dip the Azov in that regard, there's going to be a shear. The shear is that when I dip the heads of the Azov in, so there's going to be contact between all the heads of the Azov and the water that's in the bowl. Good. That is the, that is what the Maz is making reference to. It's making reference to the Nosei. Even the one who says that there is no shear, even he holds that there is a shear, not on the amount needed to sprinkle, but on the amount needed to dip in, with the Azov. When all is said and done, what we have just done since the beginning of the Gemara is deliberated in terms of whether or not our Mishnah could be going like Rabbi Akiva. And Rav Chisda, this is really the end of a really long sentence of the Gemara, and Rav Chisda happens to be of the opinion that no, our Mishnah does not coordinate with Rabbi Akiva. Because what does Rabbi Akiva say? When you sprinkle the Parah Aduma on somebody who needs it, he's going to become Tahor. When you sprinkle the Parah Aduma on somebody who does not need it, he's going to become Tamei. And if I'm sprinkling the Parah Aduma on the Kohen for all 7 days, which we do, that's the Halacha, so under those circumstances, So he's going to become tummy every time we hit him with it. And how is he doing the avoda? So fine. So according to Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Kiva is not holding like by our Mishnah. That is all but conclusion number one. That's Rav Chisda's conclusion.
What is Rabbi
Kiva's
solution for
that? There simply is no solution. Meaning it's not a problem. It's just that he won't agree with our Mishnah. So that's, we're only talking about the Zayin Yemei Milum. We're only talking about those 7 days of Afrasha. So in other words, obviously for Yom Kippur, he won't be sprinkled with the Parah Aduma. And by Yom Kippur, he'll be totally Tahor. Remember, the Tumah only requires Tefillah and Harav Shemesh. So on the 7th day, he'll be sprinkled with the Parah Aduma, and then he'll Tovel in the Mikvah, and then he'll have Harav Shemesh, and by Yom Kippur, he'll be fine. Okay. Good. That is all Rav Chisda's understanding. Now we turn to Abaye's understanding. Abaye, so Abaye Amar Afilu Tema Rebbe Akiva. David Avoda Kuliyama Ulapanya Madu Aleva Tava Vavid Harav Shemesh. And Abaye gives really a simple solution. Meaning, our Mishnah could be going like Rebbe Akiva. How could our Mishnah be going like Rebbe Akiva? It's very simple. What we'll do is that we'll sprinkle him, not in the morning, but right before nightfall, right before sunset. So he'll do the Avoda the whole day, like our Mishnah, like our Mishnah recommends, instructs the Kohen to do for the Zayin Yemei Afrasha, and then before sunset, quickly give him a spritz of the Parah Aduma. Okay, according to Rabbi Akiva, he's Tamei, but again, it's a light Tumah. He'll immediately Tovel in the Mikvah. He'll experience Erev Shemesh, and Shalom Yisrael, and he'll be fine. Okay, so and I suppose Rav Chisda, it really is such a simple solution. I imagine what Rav Chisda would counter, although again the conversation in the Gemara has come to an end, so I'm only guessing. But I imagine what Rav Chisda would say is that no, the idea is that the sprinkling of the Parah Aduma is part of his daily activity, just as like almost like an afterthought at the end of the day to do it. It's not that wasn't the intent of sprinkling him with the Parah Aduma. Okay, anyway, we're going to start the next sugya. The next sugya goes well into tomorrow's daf, but at least let's get grounded and is a good part of today's Amud Beis. So let's at least start the next sugya. So umakti or sekatoris or meitif as an heir. Now in our Mishnah, we're discussing the daily activity of the Kohen Gadol for the 7 days in anticipation of Yom Kippur. And it says that he's going to be makti katoris or meitif as an heir. And now what we're doing is we're reading the Mishnah really carefully because the Mishnah over here is giving us a sequence. And what we're doing now is we're paying careful attention to the sequence. And that is first katoris and then hatafas an heir. Ama katoris bereisha v'hadar neiros. So it sounds like that the order of our Mishnah is that first katoris and then neiros v'raminu. And the Gemara says, but I'll tell you what though, the Mishnah is in Tamid, don't give us that indication, because the Mishnah is in Tamid. Now Rashi points out over here that really what we're doing is that we're going through three successive Mishnayos. Meaning that I know it's going to sound like one long Mishnah. It's not. It's Mishnah followed by Mishnah followed by Mishnah. And we're just kind of stringing them together. But what we are doing, however, is by stringing these Mishnayos together, is that we're really going to get the correct order of the Avoda. Misha Zacha B'Disha Mizbecha Panimi. So who is going to win the lottery in order to do the Dishon of the inner Mizbeach? And Misha Zacha B'Menorah, that's the Tavas Aneris, and Misha Zacha B'Ketaris. And then there's the Ketaris. So over there, the Mishnayos and Tamid, if I'm following sequence carefully, it's first Menorah, and then Ketaris, which is the exact opposite of our Mishnah over here.
So we have a Mishnah in Yuma that has Ketoros followed them by Neiros, and we have a Mishnah in Tamid, which is Menorah followed them by Ketoros. Okay, that's called a problem. But it's not an insurmountable problem, and I'm Rav Huna, the Gemara is going to give a couple suggestions. So Rav Huna says, Mantana Tamid Rabbi Shimon Isha Mitzbahu. So basically, Rav Huna says that, look, the Mishnayos and Tamid, that's authored by a Tana, by a Tana, a specific Tana of Rabbi Shimon Isha Mitzbah. Right, the man with the vision. So he's the author of the Mishnayos and Tamid, and our Mishnayos and Yuma are not in agreement with that position. And it's a machlokas hatanayim. So va'ayib chashamin alei didnan. So the Gemara says, okay, look, it's a good answer, but it just doesn't work out. Meaning, it happens to be that we have other information that tells us that the Mishnayos and Tamid are not authored by Rabbi Shimon Isha Mitzvah. How do I know that? So we're going to take a look first at a Mishnah Tamid. Ba'lo l'ker mizrach etzvon. So first you go to the northeast and no say mizrach etzvon ma'ravis. Sorry, no stain. And then you apply the blood over there. We're talking about the dam of a standard carbon tamid, where you're going to be sprinkling it on the four walls of the mizbech, but only in two hazos, in two sprinklings. Shtayim shehin dalad, the Mishnah Zvachim, right? Fifth parak. We're all familiar. So what you're going to do now is you're going to hit the northeast and you're going to hit the southwest. And by hitting the corners, you're hitting all four walls. That's shtayim shehin dalad. So you first start off in the northeast and no stain. And Mizrach Hatzvon is my Ravis Dramis. And then what you're going to do is that you're going to go to the southwest and no stain, and you're going to give over there. And you're going to apply over there. My Ravis Drama. Okay, good. That is a Mishnah Tamid. Okay, so the Mishnah Tamid just gives us a simple instruction of how the Kohen is going to be doing the Hazaz Dam Avi Karban Tamid, one on the northeast side and one on the southwest side. Utini Allah. Now that Mishnah Tamid doesn't help us for this particular purpose, but the upcoming Brisa is going to help us because the upcoming Brisa teaches us Rabbi Shimon Isha Mitzvah Mishana B'Tamid Mizrach Tzfon is no sein Mizrach Tzfon and Marav is Drom is no sein Marava V'Achakach no sein Droma. So according to Rabbi Shimon Isha Mitzvah, he gives a slightly different variation of how the Hazaz is done on the northeast, as we just described, but when you get to the southwest, you're going to be doing it two independent walls. You do the west side, and then you do the south side. Okay, so he has a different formulation of how it's done. Rashi over here goes through a little bit more of the details in terms of why it is that he deviates. Anyway, the point is the Mishnayos and Tamid are not authored by Rabbi Shimon Isha Mitzvah because we just learned the Mishnah and Tamid together. We just saw a variation of that Mishnah according to Rabbi Shimon Isha Mitzvah. So it's pretty clear now that the Mishnayos and Tamid are not going like Rabbi Shimon Isha Mitzvah. So Rav Huna says, look, we do have a stira between a Mishnah and Tamid and a Mishnah and Yuma. So right now, Rav Huna's proposal that the Mishnayos and Tamid are going like Rabbi Shimon Isha Mitzvah, it's not accurate. So Ella Amar of Yochanan, Mantana Seder Yuma, Rabbi Shimon Isha Mitzvah. So the Gemara says, okay. So what we'll suggest now is that the Mishnayos and Yuma are going like Rabbi Shimon Isha Mitzvah. It's the same basic answer. It's just that our Mishnayos over here in Yuma are not recording the consensus viewpoint. It is only a viewpoint of Rabbi Shimon Isha Mitzvah. He's a Tana, in other words, and obviously his position is it's part of our Mesorah. But the Mishnayos and Tamid don't agree with it. But it's our Mishnayos in Yuma that are going like Rabbi Shimon Isha Mitzvah. Anyway, that's another way to not reconcile the difference, but to explain the difference between the two. Okay, we're going to stop over here. Rami Seder Yuma, Seder Yuma. Right, I know we have a little bit left to go, but it's good. Because this discussion goes well into tomorrow's daf, and we're really going to go over Seder, we're going to go over order of the Avoda. We're going to hit this a couple of times in our Masechta in terms of what the standard Seder of the Avoda is. Anyway, let's quickly recap our Gemara today. Number one, our first discussion today was that Kohen Gadol is an Onin. He's allowed to do the Avoda. He can't eat carbon, but he's allowed to do the Avoda. A special dispensation given to the Kohen Gadol, he can do the Avoda as an Onin. There's a statement in the Brisa of Rav Yehuda, which is Kol Hayom. What is that statement of Rav Yehuda, Kol Hayom? So the Gemara gives a couple of attempts to explain what it means. And eventually the Gemara landed on Rav's explanation, which is that Kol Hayom means is that don't let him do the Avoda all day. Meaning because if he does the Avoda today, he's going to end up eating of the carbonus, and we would like to avoid that. Don't let him do it. The Gemara says, really, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we're worried about him eating. On Yom Kippur, Rabbi Yehuda wasn't worried about him eating. The simplest answer that the Gemara gives is that on Yom Kippur, nobody's eating, so therefore, we don't have to worry about the Kohen Gadol eating while doing the Avoda. Okay, the Mishnah that we started off with today, on Yud Aleph Aleph, the second Mishnah, the Masechta, so it says that what is he going to be doing during the Zayin Yemei Hafrasha? So, practicing. Practicing slash doing the avoda, meaning it's not just practice. He really is doing the avoda, but basically habituating himself to doing the avoda, so that when Yom Kippur rolls around, the standard avoda sayom he's totally familiar with, and that he's got down easy. And now it's just add on to that the avoda sayom kippurim. But in other words, but now he's got the baseline down really clearly. The Mishnah also informs us that a Kohen Gadol in general can help himself to doing whatever avoda he wants, and help himself to take whatever chelik of the avoda he wants. It's again, it's a part of the privileges of being the Kohen Gadol. The Mishnah over here that says that he's doing the avoda for the 7 days, can that coordinate with the Shita Rabbi Kiva? And that was the balance of our discussion on Yud Aleph Aleph, where according to Rav Chisda, it's not going to go in accordance with the Rabbi Kiva, because Rabbi Kiva says that every time a person who does not need the paraduma gets sprinkled with the mechatas, he becomes tummy for the day. He'll tovel in the mikvah, he'll have hair of shemesh, but he'll be tummy for the rest of that day. How can the Kohen Gadol be doing a voter for the Zayin Yemei Hafrasha while also he's being sprinkled with the paraduma? So Rav Chisda says, fine, so our mission is not going like Rabbi Akiva. But the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Akiva, and in the Amud Aleph today we went over the back and forth between the Chachamim and Rabbi Akiva. Fine. So our Mishnah doesn't go like Rabbi Akiva. And then at the conclusion of the discussion, which is on the Amud Beis, Abayi says, you don't have to say that. Our Mishnah could be going like Rabbi Akiva. The solution, actually pretty good. The solution would be that he'll do the Avoda, and then at the end, towards the end of the day, you just sprinkle him with the Paraduma. And then immediately he'll tov in the mikvah, and he'll have Harav Shemesh, and our Mishnah could be going like Rabbi Akiva. And then where we ended off today is the sequence of our Mishnah. Because our Mishnah said it just matter-of-factly that when the Kohen Gadol is doing the Avoda on the 7 days of the Afrasha, so he's going to be Makter as a Ketores, and then Meitiv as Aneiros. The Mishnah and Tamid has it in reverse. So what do you do? So what you do is that you point out that it's a machlokas between the Mishnayos and the Gemara discussed this in just a little bit more detail, but basically our Mishnayos here in Yuma is reflecting the opinion of Rabbi Shimon Isha Mitzpah. And the Mishnayos and Tamid are going with the more sort of quote-unquote conventional approach. Stop over here.